And it's time for Central Coast Voices. It is 1 o'clock. And today, the discussion will be about how we can lead the country to zero carbon emissions. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargin. And your host today is Chris Kington Barker. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Carol. Since 1970, the Community Environmental Council, or the CEC as it's known, has incubated and innovated real-life environmental solutions that directly affect the California Central Coast. Their current work advances rapid and equitable solutions to the climate crisis, including ambitious zero carbon goals, drawdown of excess carbon, and protection against the impacts of climate change. My guests today are from the CEC and are Sigrid Wright, CEO, Kathy King, Director of Outreach and Education, and Michael Chiokos, Director of Energy and Climate Programs. They'll be sharing the CEC's plans to repair, reverse, protect initiative to stop putting more emissions into the atmosphere, reverse carbon buildup, and protect for future climate disasters. And welcome to all three of you today. It's good to have you here. So Sigrid, I'm gonna start with you as the CEO here. If you could talk a little bit about the CEC and how we know it's been around since 1970, but what exactly is it and how did it come about?
Sure. Well, thanks for having us, Chris. So this organization was formed right at that very beginning of the what we would call the modern environmental movement in 1970. And a lot of it, the flashpoint at that point was a crisis. It was the Santa Barbara oil spill. And out of that came a number of organizations and then just kind of a general ethic that grew throughout the early decade. CEC's particular voice in all of that was there were other organizations that were really forming to kind of stop more oil development or stop other bad things from happening. And keep in mind, there were other flashpoints going on all around the country. This was a pretty big one. It was the largest oil spill our country had ever known. CEC's voice that really emerged from that is, well, we know what we don't want, what we don't want to see, but what is it that we do want to see? And really what emerged from that was a solutions-oriented organization that, as you said, has been running strong for about 50 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And at times it's been really kind of a leader, not only in the state of California, but sometimes in the country, has it not?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our early years, there was a lot of experimentation. It's funny to talk about recycling in that way, but recycling wasn't a thing. It was kind of, we joke, it was a thing that maybe Boy Scouts did many decades
picking
ago.
Picking up cans, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Things that we really just take for granted now, like we would not go throwing now, we wouldn't throw batteries and used paint and, you know, motor oil in our trash bins. But at the time, there was no place for things like that to go. So we actually sited the first community hazardous waste collection center in the state, which was no small feat at that time. We were experimenting with some of the early green building techniques. We ran environmental education programs, some of the first kind of watershed protection programs. So that really has been kind of our MO, which was innovate, experiment with, bring an idea to scale. Usually or often the world around us would be picking up on those ideas and bringing those things to scale. So recycling actually became an industry, for example. Hazardous waste collection is, like I said, now very standard throughout the state. And then at a certain point, once something feels a little more mainstream, we will kind of fledge the program or project out, and then we'll go innovate something else and experiment with it and bring that up to scale.
now you've, you know, since you did the recycling, that was then sold to Marburg, right? So you're no longer in that business anymore. What is the focus now?
Yeah.
Where is the effort?
So about 15 years ago or so, we were asking ourselves, what really are the most pressing threats to our region? And again, it feels odd to say this, but it was climate change then, it's climate change now. And at that time, really no one was talking about climate change, certainly not at the local and regional level. You had some national policy discussions, and then you had some leadership starting to happen at the state. But we were really the first regional organization that we know of to be talking about actively about climate threats to the Central Coast. And those climate threats are very real. What we ended up doing, Chris, is we put together the first regional action plan for moving away from fossil fuels. And we did that long before there were state goals or before there was even a climate movement. And now, of course, there are, you know, every community has a climate action plan. So it was kind of revolutionary. And both the target date of that plan, the little tagline for it was fossil free by 33. So both the target date of that plan, as well as the strategies, proved to be somewhat prescient and right in line with the concepts and the strategies that are now being embraced by this, like the city of San Luis Obispo has a carbon neutrality by 2035 goal. The city of Santa Barbara has the same. So many of the strategies that were emerging there, like energy efficiency and greening the grid and moving to electric cars, which I know we'll talk about later today, those were concepts that we were flagging 15 years ago. So really that kind of early leadership, both the thought leadership and then the 15 years of implementation, placed the Central Coast in this unique position to help spark local action. And that, of course, gives the state kind of proof of concept, right? It gives them, you know, they can point to communities and regions like ours, and then they can set aggressive goals. And then, as we know, California itself has long been a climate leader.
You know, California takes a lot of hits, as well as I'm sure you know, about being so conscious or so progressive in environmental efforts or in discussions about climate change. Why do you think that is, that those efforts are focused here and not so much in other parts of the country? Or is it just perceived that way? The efforts are as consistent throughout the U.S. as they are here. Do you have as many colleagues in other areas?
Well, certainly there are other regions where there is climate leadership. And so I don't want to, like, you know, overplay California's hand, but I will say there are a couple of things. First of all, California is large. We're one of the, you know, we're one of the largest economies in the world. So what happens here matters. People move to California because they enjoy the climate. They enjoy the environment. They want to protect that. You know, we tend to protect what we love. I would also say that California has been experiencing the kind of some climate realities, right? We are experiencing the impacts here and now, and that's even at just one degree of global warming. California, and we now at this point in time, anyone that lives in California pretty much has a personal climate story, right? And most of us, for most of us, it's related to fire.
Yeah.
So I would say those things and the fact that we just have, you know, longstanding progressive leadership in California really add up to that being a true statement that California does serve as a climate leader. There are some things that we aren't that strong on at times. And I also, like I said, I don't want to, you know, overstate the leadership that goes on in other parts of the country and other parts of the world.
Was this past year, you know, I think today is 1 year since COVID was really proclaimed, okay, we have a pandemic that we have going here. And so many of the states went into lockdowns. Along with that, there were some benefits to the environment that came about in terms of less carbon emissions that were happening from travel. Has that given any validation, do you think, for people who were not as, say, as willing to believe that there's really an effort that's needed in reducing the carbon emissions, taking this climate change seriously?
Well, first of all, I want to say that the way in which we saw reduced carbon emissions in the last year is absolutely not the way in which we want to get there, right?
Of course
not. This was crushing an economy is not how how to get to that point. Yes, there were some moments where we saw, what can happen in India when the economy slows down and you can see the Taj Mahal. So in some regards, I would say, it gave us these glimpses of what's possible that perhaps in some areas where we never thought it was possible, and to have a visual, it's helpful. And I think in a couple of places, and Michael might want to speak to this later, but around, for example, around, transportation and travel, we might see some disruption that will carry forward. But ultimately, what I think the bigger story or the bigger picture here is all that happened in the last year, right? All that happened with the pandemic, with social uprising, and then with continued really quite brutal examples of climate change throughout the summer, extreme heat waves, huge fires, California's largest fire, or a gigafire, the first fire, over 1 million acres, fires that can now be measured in acres per second. All of those things are threading together into a greater awareness, maybe a narrative that of how just how our economic systems, or frankly, a capitalistic economic system is tied, and how colonialism is tied to, everything that we're dealing with now. That to me feels like the more kind of juicy or interesting conversation about what we've learned in the last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So talk a little bit about the CEC's initiatives as they relate to where you are now.
Right. So we used that year to really look at, what do we need to do now? And continue to feel very strongly, of course, that climate change is the most pressing threat, not just globally, but locally, regionally. And as you said earlier, we serve Ventura, Santa Barbara, and San Luis Obispo County, and it's very real here. Where we're at with this right now is kind of a doubling down, right? So that we're going to be putting our energy into basically three areas. One is called reverse, and that's really just about kind of crushing those emissions. We've made some great progress over the last few years, but the science is calling on us to really significantly reduce emissions in the next decade to the point of basically becoming, zero carbon. So that means in every sector. That means in agriculture, in the commercial and residential sector, in the electricity sector, industrial, transportation. Some of those are going to be easier than others. In some cases, we've kind of, so to speak, picked the low-hanging fruit, but there's still a lot to be done there. The second thing that's part of our three-pronged strategy is around working with nature to kind of sequester what we would call legacy emissions or emissions that are already in the atmosphere. And just keep in mind, I know this can be a bit droll sometimes, but we're basically just talking about like junior high school science here and repairing the disrupted carbon cycle. So I like to say it's science, but it's not rocket science. We know what to do. And our organization feels very strongly that we need to be working with nature. So working with land managers, ranchers, farmers, and other land stewards, as opposed to trying to find really high tech solutions. We have a billion years of, experiments with natural carbon sequestration. So repairing the carbon cycle. And then the third thing that we're looking at here Chris, is about protecting communities. So we know that no matter what we do from this point forward, we are locked into some amount of climate disruption. We're already experiencing that, like I said, with 1 degree of warming. And so it really, this doesn't mean that we would in any way be slowing our efforts to stop climate change, but we do need to prepare for what's we're already experiencing and what's coming at us. And a lot of that has to do with just really strengthening, and to use an overused word, but really strengthening the resilience of our communities.
And our communities, as you see them, are communities rising to that, and individually in different communities really taking on that challenge? For example, you were talking about farmers and like dairy farmers. So the first thing that comes to mind is, for me, is I lived off and on in Central Valley. You have a lot in Central Valley that comes up with emissions that aren't car emissions, but you have to have the collaboration of the farmers and the dairy farms. And
yeah.
So is that something?
Yeah. And in Santa Barbara County, and I believe in Ventura, and I'm a little less familiar about this in San Luis Obispo, but we're not talking so much about dairy farmers, but ranchers, right? So
right.
Range cattle. So we have had some really good early success working with ranchers and farmers, because again, these folks are, you know, they're land stewards. They live on the land for a reason. And they want to do right by, you know, by the environment. They may not use that language, but I do believe that many of them do want to be kind of heroes in this regard. Mm-hmm. So the work that we've been doing over the last couple of years, we've had interacted with more than 700 land stewards and talked with them about these strategies that are, it's called carbon farming, but it's essentially, you know, engaging them in the business of not just farming for cattle or farming for broccoli or whatever it is that they farm for, but to think of themselves as farming for carbon. So, you know, and in the end, that it's a benefit to them because it strengthens their soil, which makes for healthier land. It can make for more forage capacity on their land, or their land can hold more water in an extreme storm. But I will let Kathy speak at some point here to your bigger question, which is, are people engaging? And I would say that we've really seen an uptick in the last couple of years in the climate movement and people and the desire of people to be part of that.
Let me just take a quick break and we'll go right to you, Kathy. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you on Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. Today, my guests are from the Community Environmental Council, CEC. Sigrid Wright, CEO, was the voice that you were just listening to. And we're getting ready to hear from Kathy King, Director of Outreach and Education. Michael Chiakos will be coming on shortly. He's the Director of Energy and Climate Programs. If you have a question or a comment for today's guests, you can call them in to us at 805-549-8855 or email us at voices@kcbx.org. And Kathy, I'm going to go over to you.
Thank you. It's great to be here. We took part in the first that was offered by the UC Climate Stewards Program last summer. This is a new initiative out of the UC system, similar to what they have done with their California program. So it's a California-wide program. And the California Act was designed to create an opportunity for people who wanted to be docents at a botanic garden, for example, or just get to know their land area better and know about the flora and fauna that was near them. The Climate Stewards Program is similar to that, but a little more focused on climate change and the psychology around it, the communications techniques that people can use. And then it goes into the science of what's happening, just to provide some broad education to people. And then it ends with how to build resilience. And it sends people, it's designed to send people out into the community as activists and volunteers. And during the course of the class, we are connecting people with those types of opportunities. So we're running our pilot course right now. We have 14 students. And to Sigrid's point about people really wanting to engage on this, we're doing it on Zoom because we have to right now. And I can just feel the passion coming off the screen. You know, these people, we have 14 very different people, but very dedicated people who want to learn what they can do and figure out how to plug in and get involved. So it's really exciting. We plan to run this course 2 or 3 times a year. Hopefully our next offering this year will be at least partially in person. But it's, you know, it's going as well as we can do on Zoom. And we're really glad that we're able to do this. We're the first on the Central Coast to have been trained in this program. But I think there's definitely a need there to have it go broader.
Kathy, does the outreach from the CEC also work with local schools and teaching young people about how to engage in these efforts much earlier so that it becomes a part of their life? Or?
Yes, we do. We've had a program for about 10 years now called Rethink the Drink, which we have been donating hydration stations to schools. And part of that program includes an assembly where we talk to kids not just about the impacts of single-use plastic and why we have provided this machine to them, but also, you know, the greater issue of climate change. And it's gotten a lot easier to talk about that over the years. I have to say, at first it was, you know, I kind of tiptoed a little bit because you don't want to scare kids. And then kids would start yelling at me, "We're killing fish." So they get it. And then they are genuinely passionate because they wear their heart on their sleeve. And so it's wonderful to be able to do that. And we also have, you know, a variety of interns that we work with and volunteers for various events. But we are getting more intentional about that in our new climate leadership program. And we are in program development right now on a youth initiative that will provide a structured process, especially for grades 7 to 12, to engage and to become part of that core of climate activists that Sigrid was talking about. That's a real goal for us.
Yeah. And what do you think is one of the... Is there some resistance to any kind of activism in an environment? Is it that people don't think they know enough, or are they reluctant to get involved? Or do you think more people are getting involved and active for climate change, for the environment, for advocacy?
Yeah, I think more people are getting involved, but I think that they do, there's especially older people, I think, feel that they need to get some education around it first, which is why we're really happy to be able to provide that opportunity. You know, kids are getting it more and more in schools. It's becoming more infused throughout curriculum. And then we get a lot of high school students who are taking environmental science. And really that class tends to be a very inspiring kind of kickoff for their, you know, desire to go forward. A lot of them become environmental science majors when they go to college, just based off of taking that one class.
When we talk about the area that the CEC covers, what is the scope of the area that you're covering for the Central Coast? It's not just Santa Barbara County, is it?
No, it's we consider ourselves a tri-county organization. Okay. We are, you know, we're based out of downtown Santa Barbara. So, you know, a lot of our engagement happens there. But through Zoom, you know, we have one student in our climate stewards class from Ventura and one from Morro Bay, which, you know, would have been a lot more challenging in another scenario. And we have been, Michael and Sigrid can talk more about other programs that we have that are stretching further out into Ventura and San Luis Obispo. We have put some water stations into schools in Ventura and Santa Paula through the program. So we are definitely in, you know, expanding our reach farther.
Yeah, fantastic. And Michael, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the efforts that you've been involved in the 100% clean electricity and the fossil fuels?
Yeah, so our energy and transportation program really works to, you know, reverse our use of fossil fuels and get us to that zero carbon world. And, you know, I like to help, maybe we can take your listeners on a journey of thinking about, you know, my wife and I were expecting our first baby in May. And it's entirely possible that by the time she reaches adulthood, we could be living in this zero carbon world. And so what would that mean? That would mean 100% clean electricity, zero emission vehicles and cities that are redesigned so we don't need to drive so much, we're not stuck in traffic all the time, don't have such long commutes, buildings that don't use fossil fuels, and then a zero waste, more circular economy. And I think, you know, on the 100% renewable electricity, we're on the glide path there. You know, we've been fighting along with advocates in Ventura and up in San Luis Obispo for community choice energy. And now Central Coast Community Energy and then Clean Power Alliance down in Ventura, these agencies serve most of the load of the Tri-Counties, and they are committed to carbon-free power, and we're on that glide path to either have the 100% clean electricity now in many of our communities or by 2030. So, you know, once you have that 100% clean electricity, then you use it to electrify transportation and buildings, and that's really the pathway forward.
What are some of the challenges? What needs to be done in order to get there?
Well, like I said, the renewable electricity is a little easier because it's centralized and, you know, we've largely won that battle. Transportation is really challenging, though. So transportation is over 50% of the greenhouse gas emissions in California. And in our communities where we don't have as much industry, it's even higher. And so how do we you know, change the minds of millions of people to drive less or to switch over to zero emission vehicles? You know, that's a battle that you can help with policy and in Detroit, you know, with automakers. But a lot of that also has to happen more on the ground with building out charging networks for electric vehicles. And then, you know, making sure that people know about electric vehicles and how affordable, easy to use they are, how they, you know, produce zero tailpipe emissions. They cut greenhouse gas emissions about 75% to 100% if you're on the 100% clean electricity. And then they're just, you know, they're funded by and have so many benefits. So that's a really big focus for us right now is transportation electrification.
Is there still some work to do in the electric vehicles in order to get it so that you flip a lot more of the population's interest in buying into them?
Definitely. There's a lot of work to do. we're at about 8% of new vehicle sales in California and our region being electric. And you've probably heard about Governor Brown's executive order to get to 100% zero emissions vehicle sales by 2035. And so there'll be interim targets. But yeah, there's a lot of work that has to be done. You know, it's oftentimes one of the largest purchases that someone will make. And even though they may be interested in getting off of, you know, not supporting the oil companies, getting off of fossil fuels, they, you know, even though their values and desires may be there, there's, you know, a lot of friction around, okay, well, where am I going to charge the vehicle? How far can it go? Can I go on a road trip? You know, and I'm here to say that, yes, you can do all of those things. There's over 40 different electric vehicles on the road now. There's pure electric vehicles that only use electricity, and you have to recharge them at home or at fast charging stations when you're on a road trip. There's also plug-in hybrids, which act as an electric vehicle for, you know, 20 to 50 miles, and you get all those benefits, but you can burn gasoline and act as a hybrid vehicle for a longer trip. And then they're also very affordable now. So we have a grant right now that we're working on that was funded by Electrify America, who's a subsidiary of Volkswagen. And we're doing marketing and education outreach to lower to moderate income households. And there's different grants, and people can learn about this by going to our website, electricdrive805.org. And we're actually having a webinar on the 23rd of March that will describe how to get an affordable electric vehicle. And in fact, many moderate or low-income folks could even possibly get an electric vehicle for free. I know that sounds crazy, but you can stack some of the different incentives. And if you leased an electric car for 3 years, some people could drive it for free.
How would somebody learn about that?
What was that?
How would somebody learn about that?
Oh, well, definitely by the resources that we have on the electricdrive805.org website is probably enough for many people to go on that journey on their own. And definitely by coming to the webinar on the 23rd, and you can go to electricdrive805.org to sign up for it. We'll take you through the steps, and that's going to be in English and Spanish.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We're going to have it translated as well. And we're really trying to reach out to as broad of the community as possible. And, you know, when I say low to moderate income, it's pretty generous. So a family of four making $105,000 or under are ones that could potentially qualify for a free, leased vehicle or a low cost electric vehicle or even a used vehicle. There's also some incentives for used vehicles.
That's fantastic. Well, we're going to take just a few minute break, a minute break or so, and we'll be back. And Carol, I'm going to give it over to you.
Thank you very much, Chris. This is KCBX. Public Radio for the Central Coast. And you're listening to Central Coast Voices. Your host today, Chris Kington Barker, and you are invited to be a part of today's discussion. To bring your comments or questions to today's guests, you can call 805-549-8855, or you can email them at voices@kcbx.org. And back to you, Chris.
Thank you, Carol. Welcome back to Central Coast Voices. And my guests today are from the Community Environmental Council. And with me are Sigrid Wright, CEO, Kathy King, Director of Outreach and Education, and Michael Chiakos, who is the Director of Energy and Climate Programs. And welcome back. Michael, you were talking about carbon emissions and electric vehicles, but you've got a lot more than electrical vehicles that can reduce carbon emissions. So can you talk a little bit? You talked about some of the changes in housing, and there are all kinds of other ways. Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, our energy team works on a lot of different initiatives. Oh. And so, yes, transportation electrification is important, but also equally important is driving less. So we definitely work on a lot of policy, and this is a much longer game in terms of how can we design our cities so that people don't have to hop in a car and have a really long commute in traffic, right? How do we make it easier to encourage healthy alternatives like active transportation, walking and biking, and make it easy to ride the bus or carpool and not drive alone? How can we build more housing in our downtowns so that we don't sprawl into our agricultural lands and our nature, up into the fire areas, and give people options where, it's easy if they live downtown or close to their job where they don't need to always hop into a car. So we definitely work in a lot of policy realm around, changing our cities so that it's easier to get around without cars. Another big area that we work in is in our built environment in terms of our buildings. So how do we make our buildings more energy efficient? How do we make them so they're not powered by fossil fuels? And, one way there's, a big debate that's happening on the Central Coast right now. And the city of San Luis Obispo is really the first one to kick it off with the Building Electrification Reach Code. So we realize that if we're going to get to California's carbon neutrality goals of 2045, and in fact, there's many organizations like CEC and others that believe we need to bring forward that 2045 goal. We should be getting there. The science says we should be getting there by 2030. If not then, soon thereafter. We can't be building new buildings with natural gas anymore. How do we switch to buildings that are powered by renewable electricity, that are heated and cooled by heat pumps, which are extremely efficient as well as can be 100% carbon free. So those are, you know, some of the different strategies that are happening right now. And then also, you know, how do you retrofit all the existing buildings that are the majority of the housing stock? Because working on only new buildings is cost effective, but it will only get us so far. So those are some of the other areas that we're working in.
Are there like think tanks that are coming up with these kinds of solutions to the problems? So do you already know what those solutions are and it's finding a way to implement them? Or you're still looking for the design of those solutions?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, many smart energy experts believe that we have the technology and all the solutions that we need right now. It's just the political will to actually make that happen. So, as well as we're going to see, you know, increasing better and better technologies in the next decades. But what we have right now is really good enough to make it happen if we really realize that the climate crisis is such a challenge that, and it's this existential crisis that we really need to be putting, you know, more attention on it. And I think we get that in a lot of parts of the Central Coast. City of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara have carbon neutrality by 2035 goals. They're very earnest in working to get there, but they definitely need the support of the community, support of the state. You know, now we've had this change in federal leadership, and we really feel like instead of having this, you know, headwind, we really have this wind at our back now. And I think that there's a lot that can get done. I think there's also a lot of experimentation and great things that have been happening in California that are now spreading to other areas. Like CEC worked a few years ago to push the cities of Santa Barbara and Goleta to be some of the first few dozen cities in the whole country to adopt a 100% renewable electricity goal. And now hundreds of cities have that goal, and six or seven states do. And in fact, Biden is considering a 100% clean electricity goal by 2035 for our whole nation. So what you see that's happening here in California and on the Central Coast, where this living laboratory, and then these ideas get picked up by other states and in other countries. And I kind of wanted to reflect back to one item you said early on in the conversation when you mentioned, like, you know, there's been so much attention on California and these progressive policies, these like wacky liberal climate change fighting things that they're doing. But I mean, electric cars were California's largest export in 2020, and we're the fifth largest economy in the entire world. Yeah. And so this isn't, you know, these hippies in the trees, like we are really creating the clean economy future of the world. And that's an exciting place to be.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it was interesting too that the American car manufacturers have, what, three or four of them now have come out and said that they're going to only produce electric vehicles by 2035 or something, which is an astounding proclamation. So, you know, there's a lot of energy that seems to be behind it. I would really hope that we're going to get there. What, in terms of generating the electricity to provide all of these, you know, for the homes, for the cars, how is that coming along?
It's coming along great, actually. So we did some advocacy work in Ventura County, and in fact, five Ventura cities, Oxnard, Thousand Oaks, Ventura, Ojai, and the whole county of Ventura became the first cities that were powered by 100% renewable electricity when they joined Clean Power Alliance, the local community choice organization, back in 2018. So that's pretty amazing that's happening here in Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo counties, and up into the Monterey Bay region. We have Central Coast Community Energy. They have a goal of 100% renewable electricity by 2030. This is entirely from newly built solar and wind and other renewable electricity and energy storage. So this is, you know, new build renewables that are going to be powering our lives, including, you know, our electric vehicles and our buildings. It is exciting too, about one thing about electric vehicles is, like, so at my house, we've had solar since 2012 and an electric car. So, you know, for the last 8 years, we've been driving on sunshine, and that's just something you can't do with a gas car, right? Someone has to go and pump it out of the ground. But, you know, any homeowner can put solar on their home, produce enough electricity, clean electricity for their whole home as well as their car. and totally get off of gasoline. So that's something that an individual can just take, you know, to make that choice to switch to 100% renewables.
How do you respond to people that live in other parts of the country that say that may work for California because you have a lot more sunshine, but what about those areas that do not?
Yeah, well, there's also other forms of renewable electricity, like, you know, I think the Midwest. So I think Iowa is over 50% wind powered mm-hmm. right now, which is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Even other countries or other states in the whole Midwest are really leading on wind. And in fact, there's a huge push right now on the East Coast to build offshore wind. And this is, you know, Europe and in China and Japan and some other areas have really led the offshore wind development, but it's at prime time right now. And a lot of the East Coast cities are along the coastal seaboard, and they can easily take that renewable electricity from. And a lot of these farms are so far, you can't even see them now, 20, 30 miles out, and be able to feed that directly to some of those cities. So there's definitely a lot of technologies out there that are growing and scaling. You know, the amount of coal power has dropped by half in the last decade in the U.S., and that's been almost entirely changed over with renewables and natural gas. And even the natural gas is starting to drop out. Solar and wind are really the energies of the future. And we're starting to see that all over the country.
What is on, you know, I'll ask all of you to think about what's on your wish list for going forward. What is your personal focus here for CEC and for the work that you're doing? And Sigrid, I'm going to start with you.
Well, I'm going to go meta. So Kathy, do you want to, any chance you want to start smaller?
Sure, I could start smaller because I also manage our plastic program. So, you know, for me, it's about, as Michael kind of alluded to, you know, going more circular with our product and designing the waste out of them. You know, we've been aiming for reduction of single use plastics now for over a decade. We have 7 regional that we help put into place. But we're not going to recycle or advocate, you know, legislatively our waste, because, you know, the manufacture continues. So we need to figure out how to turn the manufacturers to create products that don't end up with a piece of fossil fuel product that you hold in your hand after 5 minutes of use and then throw it out. We're not going to recycle our way out of it. And we need to design our way out of it. So that's something we are definitely working on and looking. And really, we've started an education process for the region on you know, raising awareness about it and just letting people know that the blue bin is a great thing, but there's a reason it's called reduce, reuse, recycle, and that recycle is third. You know, it is the least important of those three R's.
Yeah, thank you. And Michael, I'm going to go back to you since Sigrid's going to go meta on us.
Yeah, well, the thing that really gets me excited every day is to be working in a place like the Central Coast where we have so much support for moving to a zero carbon world and a place like California that has so much clout in the world in terms of pioneering the ideas that can really help us to confront the climate crisis. So, you know, my life's passion is working to move us as quick as possible to the zero carbon world where we have 100% renewable electricity. We drive electric vehicles or don't have to drive at all, where we don't use fossil fuels in our building. So I'm really excited about the pioneering work that we're doing on the Central Coast and in California, and then how that gets spread to the rest of the states and in the world.
And the massive transit vehicles can convert to electric as well, correct?
Yeah, definitely. So one of our advocacy campaigns a couple years ago, we pushed the Santa Barbara Metropolitan Transit District, our local bus agency, to set a goal of 100% electric buses by 2030. So, you know, mass transit is moving towards electric. In fact, now there's some state regulations where all transit agencies will have to move to electric as well. You know, another thing that I wanted to mention is, and we have so many programs at CEC, we're kind of just scratching the surface right here, but we also have a huge initiative to reduce food waste. And this is really important because think about all the, about 40% of food is wasted either, you know, in your fridge or at the restaurant or on the farm. And imagine how much resources that is, right? All the water and fertilizer and all the inputs that go in to create that food, all the land for, you know, all of our land. And then that just gets wasted and makes methane in a landfill. So we have a big initiative to reduce food waste. We're working with different like casino or caterer or, you know, people that are generating food that's totally edible and then bringing it to people that are in need.
Right.
As a way of tackling multiple problems in our society.
Yeah, that's fantastic because at the same time you have food waste, you've got food insufficiency on the other side of it. And absolutely, that's great. Thank you. And Sigrid, I'm going to go to you.
Great. Well, I just wanted to, you know, this has been such an interesting and kind of generative conversation about that really speaks to CEC's problem solving approach. But I wanted to, you know, give us a couple of reality checks too, right? One is this is a timed test, as Bill McKibben would say, you know, climate change is a timed test. And the years of the climate denial, particularly over the last 4 years with the federal administration, have lost us precious time. And so this really is the moment where we have to lean in. And quite fortunately, you know, the Biden administration is coming in strong. But the metaphor that I'm using is we still have to run the ultra marathon. And it's a difference between running with the wind in our face or the wind at our backs, or the difference between running with proper equipment, shoeless or with proper equipment. It's still a big lift. Mm-hmm. The other thing, and this is kind of getting into your, you know, your question about the wish list, you know, and the other kind of reality and the thing that has emerged, I think, in more people's consciousness in the last couple of years is that the climate crisis is ultimately a system of a fundamentally broken social and economic system, right? So all of these things are entangled. We can't tech our way out of this solution. People are involved, you know, and those who are most impacted by climate change are the least responsible. It's something we haven't spent a lot of time talking about here, but climate justice is an increasingly important component of our work and anyone that wants to address climate change. So I really, you know, those are a couple of themes I wanted to make sure that we touched on before we close. The last couple of years have really shown that we're living in this flashpoint. It's daunting, it's worrisome, but in some regards also, there's really a lot of potential and I don't want to use the word exciting, but I think there's an opportunity for us here. And, you know, I would say there are just in general, more people who are becoming aware that the climate crisis is an existential threat. Kathy spoke to that. So it's been very heartening to see this emerging vocal youth movement that really brought and reminded us of the moral imperative of this work. And at the same time, we're seeing an increasing number of seniors, like the Society of Fearless Grandmothers, the best name ever for a group, who are willing to risk a rest to ensure that the world that they leave behind is livable. So all of those are things that give me heart. But I would say the, you know, I'm wishing for nothing less than to creatively reimagine how we live on this planet, from energy systems to food to land use to waste management. So that's where I'm going to go meta.
Yeah, that, you know, talk a little bit about when you mentioned that from a societal view, it is the people that are most vulnerable that are on the end of the scale that are kind of.
Yeah, what I was trying to say there is, you know, the folks who are frequently experiencing the blunt end of the stick with climate change are not those generally who have put the most emissions in, you know, and we're all participating in the systems in some way.
Right.
But, and then the other thing that I would you know, remind us, and COVID reminded this as well, is that if you're already living on the cusp, if you're already living on the edge, either financially, or in some other way, like less regarded by society, you take an added stress, and that can be COVID. We saw that, you know, with a health crisis, but it could be anything. You take an added climate stress, you take an extreme, a heat wave or fire or smoke, right? And you add that to conditions that folks are already facing. Maybe you're homeless, or maybe you're, you know, just economically challenged. All of these things are they exacerbate the situation. They're amplifiers, right? And right. That was part of the point that I'm trying to make here is climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally.
How do you respond to people that say, you know, trying to do all of these things to impact climate change and to lower emissions is just too expensive?
Okay, well, the flip answer is it's too expensive to not do that, right? So it's just think of a similar metaphor would be your own personal health, right? You can put off your own self-care, your annual checkups. You can eat a poor diet and put everything off for the sake of, maybe you say it's too expensive, but ultimately you're going to pay for it later. You're going to pay for it in medical bills and other health impacts, reduced employment, right? So think of deferring on climate, our efforts on climate change in that same kind of vein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Kathy, I go back to you. You were talking about, you know, plastics. And an example of that is trying to get rid of some of the containers that restaurants are using, right? That's been a battle. And they're saying, well, they're the cheapest alternative. Well, yeah, they may be the cheapest initially, but in the long run, there's an argument that, no, it's very costly on a lot of different levels. How do you impact that? How do you change that? People that are saying, I can't afford that.
Well, great point. And luckily, there have been a lot of alternative types of containers that have come to scale by restaurants that were concerned about their impact, and the prices have come down. So a paper container is now pretty much on par with the styrofoam container, you know, with a lot less impacts on the disposal side. So the prices are just like with renewable energy, right? It's right. Sold, the price of solar and wind has plummeted over the past decade or so. I'm sure Michael can go into more detail about that. But it's, you know, it's kind of a fallacy these days about the expense of it all, because it really isn't as expensive as it has been made out to be by people who want to keep their system in place.
Right.
And so it's really not. And you know, just pushing people to bringing their own containers, which we were on the way to doing before this started. So I think we will go back to that. And if people, I think, want to engage in that way.
Right.
I want to add something to what I just said.
And your point is well taken, that the price has come down. And Michael, you wanted to say something.
Yeah. I'll just mention that, yes, now solar and wind are the cheapest sources of new electricity, and that's why they're getting built out at tremendous scale all across California, the U.S., and the world. And I want to just flag that just for people's own personal lives, how you can see that is to get enough solar energy to put on your roof to drive an electric vehicle about 12,000 miles a year. So that much solar costs about $6,000. So you could spend that $6,000 on solar and have enough power to drive your electric car for the next 25 plus years, never spend a dime more on gasoline. So if you're spending, you know, $1,000, $2,000 a year on gasoline over 25 years, okay, quickly that gets to $50,000. Mm-hmm. So you can see how a small investment upfront pays big economic, makes big economic sense over the long run. And it's also just an amazing feeling to know that you can look up on your roof and that those solar panels are generating electricity for your home and for your car. And I know we're closing out, so I'll just make one last pitch for our affordable electric vehicle clinic. It's a webinar that's going to be on March 23rd in a couple weeks, and anyone can join it. It's going to be in English and in Spanish. You can go to electricdrive805.org to learn about electric vehicles and also sign up for our webinar. And I would challenge anyone who thinks that an electric vehicle isn't for them that they could probably learn a lot of things at this webinar. And in fact, for people that are moderate income or lower, so $105,000 for a family of four or less, you could even get a free electric vehicle. Plenty of people have been doing it, and we'll show you how at this webinar.
That's great. And your website, Kathy, is what?
CECSB.org. You can also sign up for the webinar there and find out about other events. We are doing a virtual Earth Day Festival next month, starting on April 2nd. So you can learn about that event there.
Okay. And Sigrid, last words from you.
Thank you. I'm really appreciating the enthusiasm, and I'm feeling very optimistic. I feel like we've got some momentum going.
Great. Thank you. Visit the website. It's fascinating. Lots of information and lots of things to gain from that. I want to thank all my guests today from the Community Environmental Council, Sigrid Wright, CEO, Kathy King, Director of Outreach and Education, Michael Chiekos, Director of Energy and Climate Programs. Next week, join Fred Monroe and his guests as he talks to them about fentanyl overdose and death trend here in this county and what they can do to save lives and the community. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX, made possible by underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining us.